are listening to the Reality Steve podcast with your host, Reality Steve. He's got all the latest info and behind-the-scenes juice on Becca's season of The Bachelorette and interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. Now, here's Reality Steve.
Welcome to podcast number 73. Thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Reality Steve. Got a great guest for you today. Please, everybody listening, rate, subscribe, and review in Apple Podcasts. Very much appreciated. Helps the podcast, helps with advertising, helps with our rankings. I think now we're up to 17 or 18 weeks in a row now of episodes making the top 10 in Apple Podcasts, film, and TV category. So thank you. That's strictly based on your guys' subscriptions and reviews and downloads. So thank you very much for all doing that. It's been quite a week, the last week for me. As you know, you read yesterday's column. It was a lot of a summary of what I gave out in my tweets from last Friday until Tuesday. Everything that was going on in Virginia. And, I mean, it was a lot of stuff, I know. And, obviously, I was hoping to possibly have more stuff on the Tia Colton drama. But I don't, as of yet. I think I will eventually. But the bottom line for me is Colton flew Tia out to see him for a weekend. Like, if that's the only thing that happened, which obviously it wasn't, but if that was the only thing that happened, it makes me question what Becca's doing with this guy. Obviously, she has an interest in him, but why would you want somebody who was just weeks before he came on your season was hitting up one of your close friends from your season? It doesn't really add up. I mean, there might be more to the story, but the basics are that Colton was seeing Tia before he went on this show. And if he was seeing Tia, that means he was also talking to the show and applying to be on it and meeting with producers and going through testing. So and now Becca knows this. So it is really confusing. I don't really understand it, but I guess we'll find out what happens. But Colton is certainly an opportunist. We all know what happened with Allie Raceman and how that came to be. And it's clear what this guy's agenda is. I mean, you know about his Legacy Foundation. Is that the name of it? Colton Underwood's Legacy Foundation, where he gives, it helps kids with cystic fibrosis, which is great. I mean, I applaud him for that, but it doesn't change. Because you run a legacy foundation that helps kids with cystic fibrosis doesn't change the fact that you were seeing Tia and flew her out to spend a weekend with you weeks before you show up in a limo on Becca season. Like, one has nothing to do with the other. They are mutually exclusive. So I will guess Colton will certainly be a polarizing figure this season, no doubt. A couple things I want to get to before we get to our guest. Starting next week on Friday, we will have recaps of X on the Beach on MTV. Nell Coulter will be recapping those. You've read Nell's recaps on my site for a couple of years now, and she's great. She's going to be covering X on the Beach. It does have a Bachelor flavor to it for those who are unfamiliar with it. It's an MTV show where they cast MTV people, and this season they've included some Bachelor people, where they're just singles going on a beach thinking they're just going to hang out, and then they bring their exes on halfway through. It's very similar to Real World season Skeletons, where they thought they were all just on a regular season of Real World, and they bring in people from their past. Or Explosion, the one where they only brought in their exes. Skeletons was they brought in people from their past that they might have bullied or stuff like that. So, yeah. Nell's going to be covering that. Check that out every Friday. That's going to be great, because Nell's a great writer. If you've read her stuff, she's very, very funny, very witty, and she loves these trashy MTV shows. So check that out next Friday. X on the Beach premieres next Thursday night on MTV. And the two people from Bachelor Nation that are on this season are Chase McNary and Jasmine Good. So that'll be interesting when their exes show up and wreak havoc or whatever the case may be. And also, before we get into today's podcast guest, Susie Meister, who is a former challenge competitor and is now in the media entrepreneur business. I will say this. that there are spoilers brought up in this podcast in terms of, not Bachelor spoilers, but the current season of The Challenge that is filming. It's called Final Reckoning. It's being filmed right now, I think. Actually, we didn't even talk about the city, so I don't really want to guess on the city. I remember reading about it when it first came out, but I don't know where they are. I want to say Czech Republic, but I could be wrong. There are spoilers brought up about this season, not in terms of any major storylines, I would say, but there are stuff brought about contestants that are on. If you have no clue or don't want to know when we get to that part, you might want to mute it or skip ahead. But just know that we do, there are some spoilers brought up about this current season of The Challenge that's filming. And I just wanted to give you a heads up on that. So without any further ado, let's get to it. Right now, let's get to our guest. You remember her from the early season of Road Rules. She then participated in three seasons of The Challenge, winning two of them, banking over $100,000 in winnings. She's now the co-host of the Brain Candy podcast with Sarah Rice that you can hear weekly. It is Susie Meister. Susie, how are you?
Hi, friend. How are you?
Good. Long time no talk.
I know. I'm glad that you've had me on. I can harass you a little, too.
Yeah, good. We'll do some back and forth here. Now, usually when I've brought on challenge contestants, and let's see, I've had Bananas, yep. Laurel, Tori, and who am I missing? Maybe it's just those three that I've had.
Carmaria.
Carmaria. Duh. Sorry, Carmaria. I've really spent a lot of time on their career on the show and the stuff that they did. I don't really want to do that with you as much. I do want to bring it up just in general, but you are so much more interesting than your time on the show. Plus, you haven't been on the show in a long time.
Ages, yeah.
So I'd rather not spend too much time on it because there's a lot of stuff that we can talk about in regards to you and everything that you've done since. However, going back to when you started, when you first appeared on the show, you were on Road Rules. Where were you at in life and what made you apply to do it? Was it something that you followed and were like, I want to do this? Or was it done on a dare? Or how did it come to be?
Well, I was 18, just out of high school. And back then, 1998, there were not really any other shows besides Real World and Road Rules. And I was a super fan. And there was a guy on Road Rules named Timmy who I was just in love with. And I thought, since he was from Pittsburgh and I'm from Pittsburgh, maybe if I apply and get on, then he can be my boyfriend. And so I applied and it didn't even occur to me that I wouldn't get chosen. I was so naive and just went through the process, but I was fresh out of high school, so I didn't have a clue about anything.
So I know you said you knew Timmy from the show, or saw him on the show and wanted to basically stalk him so he could be your boyfriend. So once that happened and you got on, whatever happened with Timmy in regards to that? Did you ever tell him this is why
you
initially
did it?
Oh my God,
yeah. Okay. He knew because I had written him his first fan letter. I literally sent him a letter in the mail because it was like old times, colonial period when there wasn't internet, really. And then we started dating for a couple years.
What? Okay.
Not before I did the show, after.
After, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so the first challenge season you did was Gauntlet 2 that you won.
No, no way. My first one was Extreme Challenge, which was like maybe the year 2000.
Oh, okay. Extreme Challenge, sorry.
But
you got pretty far on that.
They didn't eliminate back then, so we all made it to the end.
Okay, you all made it to the end on Extreme Challenge. So you were on four challenges, technically. You won two, and you got to the finals in your other one, Inferno 3. You won Gauntlet 2, you won the Ruins, and you got to the final in Inferno 3. And then essentially your career is over. So 2 for 4 is not bad at all. I don't think you ever lost a elimination, as far as I know.
Based on what you were
4-0 in eliminations. Not bad.
May I add, I also won the Spring Break Challenge, which is like a weird version of the challenge they did one year.
Yes.
And they did Road Rules Viewers Revenge, which I also won. So I like to think of my victories as greater than the ones you named.
Okay. No, go ahead.
Thanks,
like I said,
Steve.
No, I, I think when I saw your, I can't remember which seasons I saw, but like I said, I as people have known that when I've talked to the challenge contestants, there was a 5 or 6 year period where I was out on all of them. I just stopped watching. So it got to the point where I realized I didn't know a lot of the contestants. And then when I took 6 years off, I was like, now I don't really know a lot of them, but I'm all in now. Now it's like the last 6 or 8 seasons I don't miss. Because, you know, initially when I contacted you about doing this, the time that we were going to record was later on tonight. We're recording this on Tuesday. And I said, well, let's do it at eight Eastern. And then I realized, oh, wait a second, that's right in the middle of the challenge final tonight. No, we're not doing it during the challenge final.
Yeah, you're booked solid.
Yeah,
right.
I'm going to be glued to my TV for 2 hours tonight watching that. So
why do you love it so much?
I like the competition aspect of it, and because I'm aware of a lot of the beefs between the people, I just find it interesting. And you know why? Honestly, you know why I like it? Because I don't have to cover it. I probably would like it less if I had to cover it like I cover The Bachelor and Bachelorette. Because that's what kind of beats me down is when I actually watch the episodes of Bachelor and Bachelorette, I have to sit there and take notes. I live tweet. I mean, it's my job. I love the spoiling aspect of what I do, but the actual show itself, it becomes like, okay. I know I have to do it. It's my job. It's what makes me money. But mm-hmm. I only love the writing aspect of it and the spoiling aspect of it. The show itself and everything that goes along with it now with social media is really beating me down.
Yeah, it's draining.
Yeah, and so if I had to cover the challenge that way, especially with all the social media sniping going on between contestants, I would lose track of what's going on and who's with who. But for the show, I don't want to know the spoilers. I don't want to know about certain things when I watch the challenge. I literally just tune in every Tuesday night for an hour and sometimes an hour and a half when they have an after show. And then I never think about it again until the following Tuesday. So it's easier for me to enjoy it that way. But if I went down a rabbit hole and followed all this stuff, yeah, I would probably be like, all right.
It's too much. Yeah,
it's too much. So I do enjoy it that way. I do like the competition aspect of it because when I watch Bachelor and Bachelorette, there's nothing competition-wise. They tried it with Winter Games, but all the stuff in Winter Games, everyone sucked at all the competitions. I like seeing, like, athletes and some of these guys that are really good and athletic and can run miles up hills and swing from car to car and stuff like that's interesting to me.
It's really evolved over time too. It didn't always used to be like that in terms of the athleticism of the participants. Now everybody's like freaking built and ready to go.
I that's what I find, that's the aspect of the show that I find interesting. And then plus always, you know, drama and stuff like that, which is stuff we'll talk about in a little bit. But why did you, I mean, I'm assuming it's because you decided like, look, this isn't for me and I want to settle down, have a family. I can't just keep going on this show. But, you know, of all the seasons you were on and how many that you won, I mean, you're one of the more dominant players they've ever had. Why choose to step down and step away from it?
Yeah, I mean, in part, it came down to just sort of different stages for different ages. I had gotten married and I did start a family, so that made sense. And also, as you know, my husband worked in production on the show and in reality TV. So I feel like I got a different perspective from him as well about how the sausage is made.
Yeah.
And so it just felt like the time was right to be like, okay, my 20s have been documented. Now let's move on.
Yeah. No, I understand that aspect of it for you. And we'll definitely talk about your husband and how that all came to be, because you wrote a piece on it quite a few years ago that I don't know if anybody saw it, but it was interesting. But there's two things I want to talk about that have come up in my podcast with other challenge people that directly or indirectly involve you. So first one was the Brad and Tori stuff.
Oh my God.
You made news because on your podcast that you did, you had kind of just thrown it out there. This was back in, I think it was 20, when was this? It was 2017, last year. During one of your podcasts with Sarah, you mentioned that, oh yeah, Tori and Brad are split. They're done. And he's kind of involved with Kellyanne. And then somehow that thing just grew legs, and everyone's like, whoa, we didn't even know this, even though it was kind of known in challenge world that Brad and Tori hadn't been together for a while. But when you said it on your podcast, it became news. Explain how that all came down. And obviously when Tori came on, she was cool with you and she didn't think it was a big deal that others made it out to be. But were you like, oops, maybe I shouldn't have said that? Or what was going through your head?
No, I didn't even think it was a big whoop. I talked to Tori all the time, and her divorce was final by the time that I talked about it. And it had been so long coming that to me it wasn't like some big bombshell that I was revealing, but she hadn't made a formal announcement. So other people thought I was spilling the beans out of turn.
Yeah.
But I checked with her afterwards. I'm like, was that a secret? Did I speak out of turn? And she's like, no, I just didn't feel like it was necessary to make a big announcement about it.
Yeah. And I think that was exactly her statement. Like, I'm not that big of a deal where my divorce requires a statement.
Yeah, right.
Which is, you know, props to Tori, because some of these people do think they're a big deal and do
right, respect my privacy during this time.
Yeah, and do think that, oh, we need to release a statement. But so you didn't think that you did anything wrong. It was some people thought it was just way
scandalous, right? Yeah. No, it was just sort of like, yeah, they're broken up and now he's hitting on Kellyanne and well, let's see how that pans out.
Yeah. Okay. And that didn't pan out because now he's with Brittany.
Right, exactly.
The other thing that came up was, and this is going to be fun, because I actually don't know the other side to this. I'm sure she has talked about it numerous times. I just haven't heard it. Maybe I've read it and forgot it. But the Bananas Sarah ending on Rivals 3. So
yes.
Obviously Bananas came on my show and talked about why he did what he did, which was take the money instead of splitting it with Sarah. So first off, I don't think I know what Sarah's response to him has been. Obviously, I know she's not like, oh, yeah, no, I agree with what he did. Obviously, she doesn't. But what is her stance overall in terms of what he did?
Well, she just talked about this recently on our show, too, where she actually said his decision to take the money she was okay with. I mean, it made her sad, of course, and she felt stupid because she thought he was going to split it. But she said that the thing that really bothered her was afterwards that he, I think because he felt so much that he had to justify what he did, that he kind of acted like she deserved it and she's the worst and she had it coming, rather than just being like, you know, no hard feelings. I just played the game that way to get the money. He kind of doubled down. And she was hurt by that more than anything.
His answer to me, and I thought I heard it other places as well, was if Sarah had the most points at the end of that challenge, she would have done the same exact thing to him. She would have kept the money. Is that true?
I've heard him say that too.
Okay.
She says absolutely not.
Okay.
That she wouldn't do that to anybody. And I work with her every day. I don't think she would. He said he believes that because in a previous challenge, she had voted him in, which ultimately led to him getting sent off the show. But at that time, she and Johnny were not on the same team. So that, to me, is apples and oranges.
Yeah.
But even I said to Johnny after he took the money, I'd sent him a text and I said, hey, I don't blame you. If I was on a team with my rival, I would have taken the money too. The thing that changed for me, though, was all the stuff afterwards that I learned and about how he got fined and he broke the rules. And to me, it wasn't fair.
Well, I don't know about any of that stuff. So
do you want to know?
Oh, yeah. No, sure.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure the listeners want to know, too.
Well, I mean, we've talked about it. Sarah and I have talked about it openly that so TJ announced the winner. Johnny, what do you want to do? He said, I'm going to take the money and run.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, okay, great. That's a wrap on the season. But they kept filming and a producer came out and said, Johnny, we found this in your coat and it was an Adderall and he was not prescribed Adderall. And they said, we're going to have to fine you. And he said, okay. They fined him $5,000. And the reason that that's relevant is the way that he ended up with more points in the final was that he stayed up all night on that log and got more time on the log than Sarah. And one handy way to stay up all night
would be Adderall.
To take Adderall illegally. And so for me, that was like, oh, okay, so you got to keep all that money and you just paid a $5,000 like fee for, you know, breaking the rules. That's when it changed for me.
Interesting. Has this been, obviously you guys talked about it, but when did this come out, and was it right after the season ended? Like, was this well known in the challenge world?
Yeah, everyone in the challenge world knows about it, especially all the people that were on set that day, who, like Devin and other people that were at the final. And of course, TJ, MTV won't comment on it. And it would ruin the whole idea of Johnny. That was the best ending they could have hoped for.
Yeah.
So the pill problem, they probably shouldn't have even said they found it. They probably should have just turned a blind eye, because by finding him, then it became like something we all knew about. And we talked about it openly. And then MTV cut Sarah off from doing any interviews after the finale, so she couldn't speak to the media. We only had our podcast to discuss it.
Okay. Yeah, I did not know that.
What do you think about that?
It certainly changes the way I feel about the ending. How can it not? Because that's an advantage I did not know that he had.
And the reason that there was a spare Adderall is because when they arrived at the final, that's when they found out they would actually be competing against each other. He had brought one for her. And so he had taken one, and that's why there was still one at the end, because he didn't give it to her for that reason.
Has Johnny ever talked about this?
He talked about it with Sarah. She said, how much did you get fined? And he told her.
I mean, publicly?
No.
Okay. Interesting. That certainly changed. Like, Bananas will probably still stand behind the fact, you know, minus the Adderall stuff.
Sure.
That, you know, Sarah can say, I don't think she will, but his explanation to me was, Steve, if you go back and watch the footage, the second that TJ said you will be competing against each other, the other two couples were like, whoa, this is crazy. He said, you could look at Sarah and I's face. We both had the same thought going through our head, was we're going to screw the other one over at the end of this. So that's why he stands behind. Now, I know Sarah says that, and she has told you that she wouldn't do that. Banana just believes that she's lying, or that she would have done it. So it's something that we're never going to get to an answer to, because it's in the past and it's, you can't control it. She says, no, I wouldn't have done that. Banana says, I don't believe you. So
I think her look at that moment would have been, oh shit, Johnny's going to take my money.
So maybe Johnny read her the wrong way. He was thinking like, oh, she's thinking that she's going to do him. But she was basically thinking, oh God, if Johnny wins this, he's going to do it to me. Like,
yeah, but we are debating a hypothetical.
Yeah,
there's no
exactly.
way we'll ever know.
Exactly. And that's a huge thing, is that we'll never get the answer to this. There is no answer. And it looks like they will agree to disagree until probably the end of time. Both of
them.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about, what do you like, just overall, do you like Johnny? Or Bananas,
what's his name? I think Johnny has redeeming qualities. He's very funny, charming, and entertaining. And I think at the beginning of this journey that he's been on, he was much more likable. But he's so immersed in this world now that he's almost become his persona. And that's where it gets ugly for me. And he really should be paid by the syllable, because he never shuts up and it's hard to be in a house with him.
Are you on speaking terms with him or no?
No, not anymore. Mm. I mean, we text a lot after the finale, because, you know, I actually wanted to work with him. I'm like, why don't we do something with this you and Sarah thing? We could film something cool. It'd be funny. But then once we talked about the Adderall publicly, that was the end.
Okay. Do you think he's good for the franchise?
Absolutely.
Okay. And I think that's where I got the impression from him when he did the podcast that, I mean, he made it very clear that not only is he a contestant on the show, but he likes essentially kind of being a de facto producer. Like, he wants to make good television, and he knows what he has to do on this show when he's cast and when he goes on. And I guess I can't fault him for that, unless he's doing things that are A, illegal, B, morally incorrect, or, you know, morally corrupt. Mm-hmm. But if he's making good TV, and I enjoy the guy's sound bites. I enjoy his ITMs,
he's
so or confessionals.
Funny.
I think it's funny when he makes jokes about rookies and stuff like that, and and he makes fun of you know, other people, because it's not, I mean, it's jokingly. He's not making some serious personal remarks about them when he's talking about them in the challenge itself. You know, when somebody
not
gets
usually,
destroyed,
yeah.
When someone gets destroyed in elimination, and we get a Johnny confessional about she had no chance or he had no chance, and I mean, that's just funny to me. Like, I don't
it's
take
super
it seriously.
Funny. He's very smart and cunning, and that's why he's very good at the game. And generally, he doesn't go below the belt, but he is harder on women, and he does have a lot of double standards where the rules don't apply to him, mm-hmm. but everybody else, he holds their feet to the fire all the time.
Like
I was watching the clip for tonight's reunion,
yeah,
and he made a comment about he doesn't like Tony now because Tony got him kicked off the show, you know, through voting. And he was questioning Tony's loyalty, implying about the way Tony cheats on his baby mamas. And Johnny cheated on his girlfriend the entire time they were together. Everybody in the house, every house knows it because he does it with cast members. And that's fine. That's his business. But then it's hypocritical to then hold someone else to a different standard.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah. This podcast is becoming about exposed Johnny Bananas.
Which I am always here for.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see the finale tonight. I thought the loyalty stuff towards Tony tonight that we're going to see was more towards, hey, put, you know, kind of the same beef he had when Sarah and Jordan put him in on Battle of the X's, where he thought that they were, an alliance. And then she turned on him, and that's what led to the whole feud on Rivals 3. I thought that's what he's referencing with Tony, which is something I've never really quite understood. Because, yes, I understand it's a game, and at any point someone can put you in because they want to further themselves. But to combat that, just win. Don't lose to Devin, you know?
That's true. That's what Sarah always said is, yeah, I voted you in, but you still had a chance to save yourself. You can win.
Yeah, you can win. And that was the one thing that I kind of had. Anybody that gets voted in, look, I understand no matter how close of somebody thinks their friends are on the show going in, we see it every season. Someone's going to turn to advance their own game. Like, it happens.
Sure.
So
yeah.
You can't possibly, unless you're just one of those people that holds serious grudges, knowing you're on a show called The Challenge and knowing this format that all these people are very, very familiar with, I just don't think you can ever really go off on somebody who you thought was your friend that turns on you within the game. Now, once you get home from filming, if they totally turn on you as a friend, then feel free to call them out because they're two different people.
Sure.
But if they're just like, hey, it was the game. If Tony was like, hey, it was the game, man. I was just trying to get further myself. I'd never made a final. I've got two kids from two different women and I need some more money. I just had to do this for my family. And hey, bananas were cool outside of this game, but understand. But it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like they're not buddies anymore.
Right. Because in that clip, Johnny said, you know, not I've been loyal to Tony, not just in this game, but off camera as well. When Tony in personal stuff is doing things he shouldn't, I was like his brother. And that's when he said, we all know loyalty isn't Tony's strong suit, which because he was talking about personal stuff, that's what made me think he's referring to the relationship issues.
Okay.
Now, yeah.
I mean, and right now, as far as I know, not to give, you know, spoiler alert here, but both of them are off filming the next season. Or are they back?
Right.
Are they back right now? They're not back, right?
They're still there. They're going to be there for a long time. Yeah.
Okay. And that's The Final Reckoning is the name of that one? That's
yeah. And what I understand it, Tony is Johnny's partner.
Oh, spoiler alert. Sorry, everybody.
Well, you said that already.
Yeah,
you
I know.
Said that already.
No, I know. I mean, I did not know that, but that is interesting. So it's a partner challenge?
I believe it's something like Rivals, yeah.
Something like Rivals. They just didn't want to use Rivals 4.
Yeah,
basically.
Right, I guess.
Yeah, because when they announced that title, I was like, Final Reckoning? What is this, the last season of The Challenge? Please, no. Like,
right. I think it was a trilogy, they say, that it was supposed to be Invasion, then Vendettas, and then Final Reckoning.
Okay, so... Yeah. All right.
Gotcha.
Because vendettas is technically another word for rivals. I mean, kind of the same thing. Like, or I can see where, just when they use the word final in that title, yeah. I was like, okay, wait a second. Please don't tell me this is the last episode.
And when they came out with vendettas, Sarah and I were joking about like, uh-oh, somebody got a thesaurus. They didn't want to use rivals again.
Now, what do you think of Champs versus Stars? What do you think of this franchise?
I mean, I was hopeful that it was going to be more of like intense challenge stuff. But then I heard that after the first season, the network gave some notes that was like, there was too much personal stuff. We want just more, or too much challenge stuff. We want more drama. So then that's when season two came out and like Camilla had her breakdown and all that.
Yeah.
I was disappointed because if you're going to do it that way, then at least have them living in a house, not at a hotel on Sunset Boulevard.
And and they're not living all together. It takes away.
Yeah.
There's no drama factor like that is for a regular challenge season. And I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
The last season of Champs versus Stars, the one that we saw previous, not the one that is about to start airing. Or did it start last week? I haven't checked my DVR.
I don't think it's out yet.
Okay, it's coming up soon, this next season of Champs versus Stars. The last season that we saw. Well, first season was Champs versus Pros, and then they changed it to Champs versus Stars. But let's face it, that season, I'm sure they will admit it. I don't know about publicly, but Bananas, who was it? Bananas, CT, and Emily winning that final challenge. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit here and disparage what they did. Look, they won. They're the winners. But even they could admit that was the easiest fucking final challenge I've ever seen in my life. Like, come on.
It was so dumb.
It was ridiculous. It was so easy. I mean, I'm talking about, I'm not saying it's like, oh, I could go out there and do it better than them. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that compared to a challenge or a final in the challenge, it was not even on the same, it's not in the same stratosphere what they had to do. It was like, hey, go get some letters out of the stands in the bleachers and bring them back. Like, come on now.
Yeah, it just felt like, I guess the show is just filler, but it felt like filler.
Yeah, and when I've interviewed Bananas, it was while that season was airing. So obviously he couldn't talk about the fact that he won. And I didn't know that he won, but I was like, I asked him, I said, I don't know if I like this show yet because it just, I like the house interaction. I like the house drama. It adds to it for me in addition to the challenges. And he asked me, well, do you like the show? I'm like, I don't know yet. I need more time. It's fairly new still, but now the way that they're going, it just seems like it is filler and they're not taking it as seriously. And I'd like to see more what the producers are telling or what executives are telling the show. Like, no, we too much personal stuff. We need more competition. No, I want more personal stuff. I want fights in the house, not fist fights, but I want drama in the house. And
yeah, I'm saying that too. Like, if they want more drama, then they have to at least do the house format instead of this thing where they just set up scenes where like they talk to each other for 5 minutes in the hotel. That's stupid.
Yeah. I mean, like, even though they had that, I thought one of the good things was, in the last season was, who was it? Was it CT that called T.O. out for losing all his money?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was like, okay, that's some good drama. But then 5 seconds after that, T.O. is essentially off the show and doesn't want to be there anymore. I'm like, okay.
And that's a real problem, is that the stars are, you know, they have more leverage with production to be like, you know what, I'm done. This isn't worth it.
Yeah.
And you can tell.
And, you know, one thing that Johnny said about that was, look, you know, it's good to compete against people that are athletes in their own sport. And and to a certain extent, I do agree with that, wow, these reality TV people are really proving themselves against athletes. But the competitions that these athletes are asked to do, you know, Shawn Johnson being a world-class gymnast has nothing to do with her battling in a circle with rings. Like, I don't expect her to win that. I mean, she was dominated by, I can't remember who beat her in that elimination, but it was like not even close. But it's like, oh, I beat a world-class athlete. Well, you didn't compete against Shawn Johnson in gymnastics. You beat her in a game of rings or whatever it was. Like,
right. Yeah, it's sort of a false premise.
Yeah. So that's the problem I have with that show.
I do think that it's been successful in its mission, which I think is to give something to the audience between challenges that keeps them engaged, keeps them interested in the feuding and the beef off on social media.
Yes.
And yeah, so I think it does the job in that sense.
Yeah, but if you ask me, gun to my head, challenge or champs versus stars, yeah, it's not even close.
No brainer, yeah.
All right, time to talk about one of my favorite advertisers on this podcast. You know I'm a big fan of Sunbasket when they came aboard. Not a huge fad diet guy. Sunbasket really makes it easier for me. You get healthy, delicious meals on the table every day. You cook healthy, delicious meals at home, no matter how much experience you have in the kitchen, which for me is none. I heat up soup. I make sandwiches. Occasionally make the pasta, but no, not a kitchen guy. But you just go to the Sunbasket app, pick from 18 weekly recipes like the Thai turkey lettuce cups. Like, that's my all-time favorite when it comes to Sunbasket because they're very easy to make. There are paleo, gluten-free, lean and clean, vegan, Mediterranean, family options, more. Plus, Sunbasket works with the best farms and suppliers to bring you fresh, organic produce and responsibly raised meats and seafood. Best part, it's quick and easy. With Sunbasket, everything's delivered with 30-minute recipes, ready to whip up anytime, no grocery shopping required. There's something for every healthy journey and every busy lifestyle. Go to sunbasket.com/Steve today to learn more. Get $35 off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/Steve for $35 off. sunbasket.com/Steve. Also becoming a big hit is this Fordo coffee. We've had it on the podcast a couple times. Sometimes you need an energy boost, and you don't really want to do those other energy drinks that kind of make you crash. A friend of mine recently introduced me to Fordo Organic Coffee Shots, and it's excellent. Fordo comes in 2-ounce shots. They look like coffee cups. Just pop off the top, drink for a super quick, clean energy boost, best you've ever had. And because they're made with only organic, natural Colombian coffee, they don't give you any jitters or make you crash, including 100 milligrams and 200 milligram energy flavors, which are equal to drinking 1 and 2 large cups of coffee, respectively. There's something for every energy level. I've taken a couple myself. My favorite flavor is the Hershey chocolate, and I'm not a coffee drinker, I'm telling you. I don't like coffee, but in small doses like this, certainly can handle it. You will too. Here's the best part. You can buy Fordo organic coffee shots right now at a huge savings. 30% off with the promo code Steve at Fordo, F-O-R-T-O, coffee.com. You heard me right. That's 30% off only for our listeners. Fordo is normally $15 for 6 organic coffee shots, but with our code, it's only $10 for 6 coffee shots, and it's free shipping. Take advantage of this deal now. You'll thank me later. Go to Fordo, F-O-R-T-O, coffee.com, and use the promo code Steve. Now let's get back to Susie Meister, uninterrupted, for the remainder of the podcast. Okay, now let's move on to your husband.
Mm-hmm.
And not just him in general, but how things came to be. Because back in the day, like you said, your husband worked as a sound guy on one of your seasons. And you wrote a piece for this for, looks like, the Good Men Project back in 2012, where you basically dissected how you, quote-unquote, seduced your husband while filming was happening, even though you couldn't do anything about it. So explain to people who never read that and who are unaware that you are currently married to a sound guy that worked on one of your seasons exactly what you did.
Well, as most people do know, the way that reality TV works is that there's a line between production and the cast to varying degrees depending on the show. But on the challenge, you're really not allowed to interact with cameramen, PAs, sound guys, people like that. But they're there and they're in your living space all the time. And in the case of sound guys, they go up your shirt and put your microphone on every day. So it's an intimate act, but you're not supposed to speak at all. And when you're in a house of lunatics, as I have been, then the silent people become way more attractive. And so there's usually people on the crew that you have a crush on, but it's just something to pass the time. And you just sort of talk about them, or you try to get them to talk to you, and you're usually unsuccessful. And that's what happened with me and my husband. I just thought he was handsome. And I would hit on him every day and ask him to go out with me, and he would totally ignore me.
Like he wouldn't even verbally respond to you.
No, he wouldn't. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it was the worst. And so then I could create in my mind this human being that I imagined him to be. I found out eventually he was British. I didn't even know that. And so that was why at the end of the ruins, I went into a one-on-one battle. And if I lost, I was going to go home. And it was against this girl, Kim. And we had to basically wrestle a rope out of the other person's hand. And it went on, and it was brutal. And I was never going to let go of that rope because I not only had money on the line, but I needed to make it to that rap party. And so, because at the rap party, then all bets are off, more or less, and you can interact with the crew. And so that was what I was aiming for. And so I made it to the rap party, and then I said, are you ready for this? Because I'm serious. And he was like, yep. And we've been together ever since.
How great is that? So what year was that, that you filmed Ruins?
2009.
And you guys have been together ever since. You got married in what year?
2010.
Oh, so you got married fairly quickly after that.
I don't kid around. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're not messing around whatsoever.
Luckily, he was as delightful as I imagined, but it could have just been, you know, a one-off, but it was not.
And so basically since then, you did, like we talked about, after the Ruins, how many shows did you end up doing?
The only thing I did after Ruins was that Spring Break Challenge.
Spring Break Challenge, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you basically started your life with him.
Yeah.
And you guys recently, well, I don't want to say recently, within the last 3 years, 3 years ago, you moved from Pittsburgh to California. So what have you been doing outside of the podcast with Sarah? What have you been doing since you guys moved? What was the reason for the move?
Well, when I was in Pittsburgh, I was getting my PhD in religious studies.
Yes.
And so once I finished that, we were free to go wherever. And since he works in the industry and I was interested in coming back into it, it seemed like a good time to come out to LA. So that's what we did. And I've been doing my podcast with Sarah. And then it went so well that I realized that I had kind of created a template and that there were a lot of other people that do reality shows that don't then have anything to do with the audience that they've developed. And so I started reaching out to people that have done The Bachelor and Teen Mom and other reality shows and saying, hey, if you want a podcast, I can help you create it. You just have to be adorable on the mic, and then I'll do all the boring back end stuff. So we created our own podcast network, and my husband and I do that full time.
Okay, so that's your full time gig with him. And I think one thing that you wrote about recently, you wrote a piece for The Medium, which came out a couple weeks ago, where you were really, really critical about the reality TV world and the things that go on behind the scenes. But it was important stuff. I think it's stuff that a lot of people that watch these shows don't even think of. Someone like myself, who's involved with The Bachelor and Bachelorette as much as I am, have heard all the stories of what goes on behind the scenes. But you kind of laid it out there in a piece that you wrote for Medium that I will link to in today's post. Overall, what made you feel the need to write that?
I feel like ever since I've started doing this show, I watched, because I started so early. It was 20 years ago that I began. And I just watched the way the genre had changed and the consequences that having more and more of these shows has had on the people that participate on them. And I just think that people might want to know what it is that they're consuming. And my goal is not to get people to not watch reality TV, because there's plenty of shows I really love too. And as I said, my husband gets, you know, a great living off of it. But the way that they produce the shows is troubling to me. And I feel like they could stand to make some changes that would continue to produce great storytelling, but would be more ethical in their approach.
And if you had to pinpoint one thing, what's one major thing that you would want changed in the way reality TV is done?
The reason that I called the piece Cast Aside was because after you're finished, and especially if, you know, you're choosing to go back into your normal life, you are literally cast aside. Like, you are no longer interesting because you're not a commodity anymore. And sometimes you're left to flounder and not know where to go or how to get a job, especially if you have left a digital footprint of your bad behavior on the shows. And so I wish that they would just do one thing, which is provide aftercare for people that need it, who might not have resources or a foundation or a good family, where they can contact the production company and say, I am struggling, I'm homeless or whatever, I'm struggling with addiction. Can you provide me resources to help me deal with that? I think it would be a great gesture and very helpful to a lot of people.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you 100%. I know there are people from the Bachelor and Bachelorette world that have struggled with that post-show. There have been quite a few suicides in the Bachelor and Bachelorette world where, not saying that because they were on the show, that's why it happened, but was it a factor? Absolutely, it was a factor in playing it. You can't say like, oh, because they were on The Bachelor, that's why they decided to kill themselves. No, that's not what we're saying. But these people are struggling sometimes, and especially now with the way social media goes and the trolling and the bullying and the hatred that people receive, some people are a lot more sensitive to it than others.
Mm-hmm.
People put on a good front sometimes and are just like, look, I don't care what these random fans say. And that's always been my stance. Like, I don't care what people who I don't know think about me. Like, why should that affect me in any way, shape, or form? And to me, it seems easy, but I know, having dealt with quite a few of them in the past, that I know it does bother a lot of these people. And one of the things you talked about was the bad behavior from the contestants on this show and how reality TV kind of incentivizes bad behavior on this show. One of the things that you wrote, which was a great paragraph, and I want to read it, was you said in your piece, producers control every aspect of the filming environment, and when they perceive a lull in the action, they accuse us of being boring and, quote, not making the most of the experience, which is code for, quote, do something interesting. These implicit directives lead to fights, hookups, and bullying amongst the cast. I've heard the same stuff goes on in Bachelor and Bachelorette world, not necessarily fights and hookups, but hey, let me say something as a producer to a contestant that'll stir the pot. And here come the arguments and insults being flung back and forth. So having been through it and experienced it yourself, is that something that you think could be curtailed?
Yeah, I mean, to me, Sarah and I talk about how we have hung around with reality people a lot in our private life, you know, because you become friends, you go out, whatever. There have been exactly zero fights, physical or verbal, during those times. Mm-hmm. The reason is because it's a totally different environment where there is no incentive to fight. If those fights were natural, like the fist fights and stuff, then they would happen off the air too. They do not. And so something is at play. And so I really do think that the producers could do something. I understand they want to make good TV and there has to be drama, and that when there's money on the line, that increases adrenaline too. But to me, everyone knows the best way to get invited back is to misbehave.
Yeah.
Everybody, the viewer knows that too. So for the production to pretend like this is all organic and it's not, they have no hand in it, is just a lie.
Without a doubt. I think, and I think that it's funny because of all the podcasts that are going on right now, because that's also the big thing, is reality TV contestants are now coming off TV and starting their own podcasts and, you know, kind of talk, whether it's about the time that they were on the show, they obviously still are under some sort of contract where they can't spill everything, or else plenty of people would have written tell all books by now about what goes on. The one thing that sucks is, of all the podcasts going on right now with reality TV contestants, you'll never hear them interview, or even me, who isn't a reality TV contestant, I will never interview a current reality TV producer because, number one, they would never do it because they know what questions are coming, and they couldn't admit to it because I think they all know that, honestly, if they were true to themselves, they'd realize that what they do for their job is pretty horrible, and they would never admit to that. They just kind of have to go to sleep at night and put their head on the pillow and know what they do for a living is horrible and what they do to people is horrible. But it sucks that you can't talk to any of them because they would be out of a job in the industry like that, like snap of a finger. They wouldn't have a job if they talked about what they did behind the scenes. And that's and that sucks. But you work with somebody who was behind the scenes. Was he as bad? Was he as bad when you were doing it? And were you like, when you got off, were you like, hey, can you tone it down?
No, because sound guys and camera guys really are just neutral.
Yeah.
They don't get involved at all with the cast in that way. So, and my husband worked on shows like Dance Moms, which many people would probably find exploitative. And so we talk about it a lot. Like, what are the ethical boundaries here? Mm-hmm. And also, our circle of friends includes tons of reality producers. I go out with them all the time and I talk to them about it. And there is a sense of like, I don't know if it's denial or the ends justify the means, or I hear a lot of this. People know what they're getting into when they go on a show.
Yeah.
I hear that all the time.
All the time.
And they say that, I think, because it gets them off the hook.
Yep.
Like, what did you expect would happen? And so I guess they have to, because otherwise they would be out of work. What are they supposed to do? I would suggest more ethical storytelling and making it in certain ways like it used to be when I first started, because I've seen the way it changed. And so I know how it used to be, and it's different now.
Yeah. And it's just like times are changing in television. And because, you know, when you say you saw it at a time where you were able to tell a good story, that was also 15, 20 years ago when there weren't nearly as many channels, there weren't nearly as many options for people to view. So how are we going to stand out? How are we going to get people to view our show? And it turns into basically up the ante, you know, up the shock factor, up the drama and the violence or the fighting and screaming and whatever. I mean, it's kind of just, these are the times and this is what has to be done. And doesn't make it right. It just means that this is the times that we're living in. And it does kind of suck.
I do think it's a little bit of laziness though too, because when you see shows like even something as simple as the Great British Bake Off or Leah Remini's Scientology show, which my husband works on now. I mean, those are great storytelling. They're not exploitative. They do provide, Scientology show does provide aftercare for people that appear on there. And that is a hit show. So it can be done. I think it's the competition ones that are more, for lack of a better word, challenging.
Yeah, no, actually that's, I think when I went on that whole spiel there, I kind of meant the competition shows.
Yeah,
I just think that it's, I totally agree with you with the way it's done on these competition shows, and it certainly needs to change, and I just don't know if it will, and that kind of sucks. Because one of the things that you talked about in your Medium column as well, the thing that you're a big proponent for is post-show access to possible, you know, therapy or counseling, whatever it is, because you know people, and even yourself, admittedly, suffered from PTSD from going on these shows. Now, PTSD is a phrase thrown out there a lot, but explain what it means in your world.
Yeah, and actually I was listening to when Johnny was on your show and he said that he felt like he experiences that to a small degree when he comes back. And I was surprised that he said that. But after my first show or second show, I was diagnosed by a psychologist with it. And it related to symptoms of nightmares, anxiety, just a really intense depressive symptoms. And it felt, I was just a kid, man, you know, and I was all of a sudden in this whole nother universe. I had no idea what was happening. And a lot of the people on the shows are not stable. And so you're surrounded by people that do things that you're not used to as well, including the violence. And so, yeah, that was true for me. And I, as you saw in the article, a lot of the other people I spoke to had received the same diagnoses and same struggles. And I think for a lot of people, it manifests itself with addiction.
Yeah, I think that there's, you mentioned in the column as well, some legally had to change their names. Others paid for Google search results of themselves to be scrubbed. Many people have to avoid social media at all or cut off the comments because it affects themselves. You were even denied, you were told you were denied into a law school despite having good scores and great credentials because your presence would be a distraction to other students and lessen the credibility of the school. Like, that's insane to me.
Right. And it sounds like okay, well, what's the big deal? You've turned out fine. Everything's fine in your life. You have a job, you have a husband. But I mean, that is real consequences that for another person could have totally derailed the course of their life.
Yeah.
Because they chose to appear on a silly show where you try to win $10. And so I just wish that people were more aware, and especially producers would make the concessions necessary to sort of support the people that they get rich off of.
Yeah. The notion of, well, they know what they're signing up for. It's just, it's not good enough anymore. You can't, mm-mm. That can't be a reason that you're doing what you're doing, because like I said, it's one of the things that's kind of beaten me down with the competition shows. And obviously the one I cover the most, The Bachelor and Bachelorette, is I've seen this show change people, and usually yeah. almost 95% of them for the worse, and change them in a way that not necessarily they all become PTSD or become emotionally depressed. I just think they start believing their paper clippings, if you want to call that
totally
an expression anymore, because the adoration from strangers on the internet is something that, frankly, a lot of them are starting to basically live off of. It's almost yep. like air to them. And it's sad. And I, you know, you can't help the fact that social media is there. There's just nothing you can do to change it. Twitter's not going anywhere, I don't think. Facebook, although after today, maybe Facebook will be facing some things. But no, I mean, it's for the most part, it's not going anywhere. Instagram is huge. And when these people kind of revolve their lives around how many likes and how many comments are that are compliments come through, and you can make a living now off being an Instagram quote unquote influencer, which is just drives me batty.
But here's the thing though. I totally understand why it drives you batty, but I think for a lot of those people, they feel like, well, what am I supposed to do now? I can't go back to my job. And so they're left to sell skinny tea. And
yeah.
I am sympathetic to that, because I do think that's part of the problem is they, you know, when they show them on The Bachelor, the first season, they'll list their professional work in the title. But then how are they supposed to go back to being a dentist after they've like competed for a dude on TV? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I mean, it drives me batty in the sense that, I mean, I'm saying kind of like, hey, get it while you can. However, I just think a lot of these people don't have a long-term plan, and I think that's where it gets lost. Is it's
totally.
Just, I think they think Instagram's lasting forever. And 5 years ago, if you would have said you can make 10, 15, 20 grand a month being an Instagram influencer after going on The Bachelor or Bachelorette, you probably would have told me I was nuts. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, 3 years from now, 5 years from now, we don't know what that next thing is going to be. We have no idea, just like we didn't know 5 years ago you'd be able to do it off Instagram. So what I'm saying is that I think they just need to, it's the thing now, it's what they all are doing. Let's face it, a lot of people are signing up to be contestants on The Bachelor and Bachelorette because they know what can come
yeah.
post-show. So I don't fault them for getting it while they can, but one, admit that's why you're doing it. Don't pretend that you're really out for love and all this stuff. And two, just don't let it be your identity. That's the thing that I think I have the biggest problem with, is you become that person as opposed to, hey, I went on the show, I did it, mm-hmm. I had fun, I made a bunch of friends, but I'm not going to lose who I am. I'm still going to have and hang out and take pictures with my friends from back home. The thing that I've always found so funny is the people that before they're ever contested on the show, they have a normal Instagram page with 500
yeah.
followers, and they post with all their friends. And then the second they're off the show, the only pictures you see of them are doing Bachelor Nation related stuff. And it's
you're
like,
you're so right. I never thought about that.
Yeah. And it's just like, why can't you go back? You can still hang with your Bachelor friends and take pictures, but every picture I see now is you with your Bachelor friends. And I don't
mm-hmm.
get it. You have other friends, or did you ditch your other friends because you're now a, you know, F-list star? Like, I don't know. I guess I'd have to ask each of them individually. I don't want to throw a blanket over all of them and say they all do it, but plenty of them do.
I will say, though, that I appreciate one thing about the Bachelor franchise in comparison to ours, which is it seems like the Bachelor people don't pressure the cast members to sort of take on the identity in terms of like their social media handles and stuff. Like if you go on the challenge, MTV will try to get you to put MTV in your handle. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them do that. Like I think even Johnny has MTV Bananas as one of his handles. And I just feel like talk about short-sighted and to take it on as your identity. It's literally in your name on social media. And the Bachelor people can make a ton of dough from the posts that they do on Instagram and stuff. The challenge people, it's really limited on how you can make money. So I really, a lot of them that I speak to that I say, why do you keep doing the challenge? They'll say, well, what else am I supposed to do? And when they go back home, they can't be like a server in between to make money. So they just wait. And one of them like just went on Medicaid because she's so broke. It's crazy.
Yeah. No, it's sad. And, you know, as you've seen, and as we've all seen, Bachelor World is starting to infect the challenge world.
Oh my God, isn't that weird?
We had Josh Murray on Champs versus Stars. We've got X on the Beach, which premieres next week with mm-hmm. two former people from Bachelor Nation, Chase McNary and Jasmine Good, are going to be on X on the Beach. I don't know, and if you want to spoil it, please do. Are there any Bachelor people on Final Reckoning?
I believe there are not.
Same,
but
that's
what
I've heard.
I thought Josh was supposed to, but then I don't think he got the call in the end.
Yeah, I know that there were people that were in discussions for Final mm-hmm. Reckoning, but then when the cast was released or whatever, I don't think it happened. Now, I know that we had a couple Final Reckoning incidents early in the season where people were sent home.
Yeah.
Sorry, spoiler again. I won't mention who the people are, but there were some incidents where people were home for something that happened on the show and something that happened back home. So I don't know if those people were filled with Bachelor people. I don't know. I don't think, though, if you had to ask me. If you had to ask me, I don't think there are any Bachelor Nation people on Final Reckoning. But I can pretty much guarantee you, I know they're in talks, and
it's happening.
It's certainly happening. Now, will MTV people infect Bachelor Nation? I don't think so, because I think
Mm-mm.
Bachelor World thinks they're above MTV, so they would never put those people on show. Yeah, like, well, and they're also their network as opposed to cable. You can get away with a lot more on cable than you can on network TV.
Yes,
we know
totally.
That. So. I mean, it's a fascinating discussion. You and I could probably talk about this for an hour, but
I know I'm the worst about it. I could go on and on.
No,
but
I appreciate it because I think this is stuff that needs to be heard and it needs to be told. And I've talked about it with former Bachelor contestants in the past, but you coming from a different perspective where you're married to someone who worked in the industry, worked on the show that you were on, that doesn't happen too often. We know that contestants have hooked up with production people in the past, but you actually ended up marrying one and you know, had a child with him. So I mean
it's legit.
Yeah, I mean it's a really good discussion because, as I mentioned earlier, we have had people in Bachelor Nation. There's been, I want to say, 4 to 5 suicides of former contestants that, like I said, you don't want to directly say it's because they were on the Bachelor or Bachelorette, but what happened to them after the show and stuff that they had to deal with, and they had no one to turn to. They couldn't go to the show and say, hey, I need help. Will you help me out? Will you pay for medication or would you pay for therapy? It's just, you're brought onto the show. They use you for the time that you're there. And the second you're off, they don't give a shit about you. Essentially.
Yeah.
And that's
After that piece came out that I wrote, and after each piece that I write, I end up getting blocked by different production people. They unfollow me, and I even get text messages when they're like, quit shit talking this show. And I just think, well, I love reality TV. What I'm saying is because I want it to go back to being the way it was, or at least something closer to that. And you know, it's not because I'm trying to derail the genre, nor do I have that power. So if anything I'm saying is untrue, I'd love for them to say so, but they never respond publicly, Buna Marie or MTV.
Yeah, and they can't, like we talked about earlier. I'd love to have a producer of a current reality TV show of a competition one. Not like documentary one, like Leah's show, where it's more real. Like, Leah's show is, I guess, technically considered reality TV, but it's actually real, you know? I mean, it's they're not doing anything to, hey, go say something bad about this person. Like, I don't think that's going on.
Yeah, it's a different style.
Yeah, completely different style of show. But, yeah, you, I mean, of all the Bachelor and Bachelor contestants that I've interviewed, they all kind of say the same thing. Without going into too much detail, you can hear it in their answers that, yeah, you know, producers want you to do this, or they won't let you go to sleep until you give them an ITM, or they'll withhold food from you. And then you just start saying stuff in your ITM because you want to go to bed and because you want to get something to eat. Like, that's, that shouldn't be the way it's done. But like you said, if you don't do it, there's really no story there. It's just like, yeah, people are all going to sit in a house and just kind of get along unless they're basically told don't get along. You know, say say something about that person, or what if that person said this about you, and go from there.
That is why Johnny is so good at what he does, because what comes out of him, it has nothing to do with alcohol or being coerced. He's just into making reality TV, as you pointed out, and is fine with being the villain, fine with being a persona, and it's working out great for him.
Yeah. No,
and in that article, I pointed out, though, that I think that for the white straight men on the show, that they have an easier time with sort of the aftermath than a lot of the high risk populations do.
I agree with that. And the other thing I agree with that we didn't really get into, but it's something I came up about with one of my former guests who was a female, who was Olivia Caridi, who was a quote unquote villain of the of her season, was that if you're a male villain on a reality competition show versus a female villain, the adoration slash hate is light years different. And perfect example was Chad Johnson from JoJo season. You remember Bad Chad.
Yeah.
Chad, and he was in your neck of the woods at the time. They were actually, you were probably in LA at the time when they filmed at Nemacolin.
Resort,
when they were in, they went to Pennsylvania for an episode. That's where he got kicked off and whatever. But Bad Chad was just, he was a bully. He was talking shit about the other guys. But then you look at comments on his Instagram after that all aired, and it was women saying, "Oh my God, Chad, you're so hot. It's so, it's editing. Oh my God, I love your personality. You tell it like it is." Whereas if you're Olivia and you're a female, people are telling you, "Die, bitch." And,
oh my God.
You know, it's just you're taken so differently if you're a female villain than if you're a male villain. You're almost praised if you're a male villain in this genre. And it's it's just how do you change that?
Well, and, you know, I feel really bad for Sarah, because even though her that Rivals 3 thing happened a long time ago and she isn't even a villain, like, they replay that scene where he takes the money. Every challenge, there's a flashback to it. And then people come to her social media and make comments and talk about bananas. And she's like, I just want to move on. It's like she's stuck in time because of that clip.
Yeah. And
that can be really difficult.
For sure. And I'm sure they're not going to, I'm sure they're not going to not play that clip anymore. It's just,
and
especially
they don't
in the
pay
challenge
you for those reruns either.
And in the challenge world, because it's one of the seminal moments, if not the seminal moment in the history of the challenge, why would they stop playing it, you know? And it sucks for her, but there's nothing, you know, it's not going to change. But like I said, we can talk about this stuff forever, but I want to wrap it up with what I call the final 10. I got 10 questions. Some are show related, some aren't. And we'll just go through with these and answer how you please. So, question number one, what was the toughest challenge that you did?
The ruins.
And why?
It was so brutal in terms of the way it was produced, and we felt like prisoners. I always say we were like animals in a zoo, and that's why we acted like it, because that's how we were treated.
Yikes.
Yeah. I know how to get real dark real fast. Yeah.
Question number two. I've asked everyone else this from the challenge, so I'm going to ask you. Who is your Mount Rushmore of challenge competitors?
Ooh. Oh, my God. Like the best of the best.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be based on wins, because then bananas would be in everybody's. It's just when you think of the challenge, who are the four names that you immediately say, these were the best to ever compete, play, win, elimination, just everything involved. Know how to play the game, all this stuff.
I have to choose Mark Long. He's the godfather.
Okay.
He's got to go up there. I think Cara Maria is a beast. Sarah, of course. And maybe Derek.
Okay.
I think I'd go for those. How many?
Four. Yeah, two? Four.
Yeah. Yeah, that's who I'd choose. Two girls, two guys.
So Mark, Derek, Cara Maria, and who was? Oh, and Sarah.
Okay. And Sarah. Yeah.
Okay, question number three. Mm-hmm. Your son, Lincoln, is five.
Yeah.
And according to you, he's crazy. Nice. I was gonna do a compare and contrast, but he doesn't have a sibling. So, just tell us a little bit more about Lincoln and his personality.
Oh, that's a nice question. I mean, he's a delight and he's hilarious, but I just don't understand why boys are bonkers. Like he's bananas. I don't know what it is with you people. And so there's just a lot of talking. It's like having Johnny Bananas in a 5-year-old. That's what it's like. But I think it's going to pay off. The pediatrician says they become the movers and the shakers in the world. So who knows if that's true, but let's hope so.
So is it just he just talks a lot and does he ask a lot of questions or is he?
He's high energy, he's a lot of talking. Okay. Yeah. And okay. That's why he's an only child.
he was your birth control, essentially.
I mean, he really is a delight, but it's just a full-time job over here with that kid.
Yeah. Okay, question number four. Now, when I first came in contact with you, I want to say, I can't remember. Do you remember what year it was when we did when I first appeared on your podcast?
I think it was 2013.
Okay, yeah. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I remember a question that you asked me because I never forgot it because I thought it was so random. But I'm going to ask you the same question now. Do you know what question it is?
Yes. Is it what do I keep in the trunk of my car?
Yes. What? You asked it to me 5 years ago, so you get it now. What is in right now?
First of all, what do you keep in there now?
Oh, I will ask. I'll answer. But you go first. What's currently in the trunk of your car?
Okay. I have a bag of bags, as you do in LA, because you have to have reusable bags. I have an umbrella that I never use. Oh, and this is the best and totally indicative of who I am. I have a travel wine kit.
Oh.
It's not for drinking in the car, of course.
Yeah.
But like sometimes when you travel, you don't want to drink out of like the hotel gross glasses. So this is like this travel kit and you screw it together and you can take it wherever you go.
Okay. Do you remember what my answer was 5 years ago?
I don't.
Okay.
What was it?
My answer 5 years ago was nothing. I have nothing.
I should have remembered that. That's hilarious.
I have nothing in my trunk. And so when I was thinking about this question, I was like, okay, what do I have in my trunk? Well, I just got back from California yesterday. So I had to take my suitcase out of my trunk when I got back from the airport. And I looked in there. I have one thing in there, and it's a towel. That's it.
What?
I have one towel in my trunk. That's
what is
it.
With you?
I have nothing to put in my, I mean, you got to remember, I'm not married. I don't have kids. So I don't have anything like where I have to have something all the time in case there's an emergency. So I don't have anything in there. Nothing. And the only thing that I ever do have in my trunk is my luggage when I travel. And then that's just there from the time I go to and from the airport. Like,
this is going to haunt me now because I don't know. It's because we always ask the question because we say that it's symbolic of where you are in your life. But what if that means you're an empty vessel? Yeah,
that's great. Now I just got psychoanalyzed that my life is nothing. Is that what it is?
What do you do with the towel?
Well, the only reason that I put it this way, the only reason the towel is in there is because I think it was from when I moved or when I was moving stuff and had to fill up my trunk. I put a towel over things or maybe in between things so it didn't like bang against the other things.
Are you super tidy and organized? Is that what we're dealing with?
No, not necessarily. I just don't have anything to, I'm trying to think of why I would have something in my trunk and keep it there and just
Most
drive around.
Most people at least have an umbrella or a first aid kit.
No, I don't have one of those. Nope. No, the only thing in my trunk is what comes with the car, which is the spare tire and a towel. That's
you are not a troubleshooter.
Yeah. Apparently, if I'm stuck in the middle of nowhere in my car, I'm screwed because I got nothing. I got no, I got no wine cases. Right. I've got no anything outside of a. I think it has one of those, you know, in case I get a flat, there's a jack in there. But if you ask me to. I guess if my life depended on it, I could probably figure out how to change a tire, but I call AAA when I have a flat tire. So, yeah.
I gotta send you something to keep in your trunk, just like to have something.
Like a book or
anything. Christ's sake.
I know. Unbelievable. Okay. Anyway, next question.
Yeah.
Question number 5. Tell people something about having a PhD in religious studies that people might have a misconception of.
Oh, well, people think that I'm religious and I'm not. So I'm a scholar of religion, which means I study it, I do research on it, and I publish papers on it, but I don't practice any religion at all.
Okay, well, that's a huge misconception I'm sure people have of it.
Yeah.
So that definitely helps. Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that you just have a PhD in religious studies, I think, is just almost like an oxymoron when it comes to reality TV contestant, you know?
That's for sure.
People just don't expect that. And, you know, you are very outspoken on Twitter.
Yes.
With
politics.
Politics and whatnot. Yeah. And, you know, this is something that I'm not a big politics guy. I don't follow it. So, but I'm clearly aware of what's happening in this world right now. But I just don't choose to go the politics route because it's just the odd, it just to deal with the trolls, of people, because you, no matter what side you're on in politics, you have basically half the audience that disagrees with what you say. So
true.
What's the point? That's kind of the way I think about politics. I mean, I have my beliefs and I'll stick to them. I just don't verbally, express them, just because I don't want to hear your argument on the flip side, because I don't care what you have to say about it. It's not like it doesn't matter to me. But I've read your tweets, and you know, if I were to say anything, I'd say that there's a lot in your tweets that I agree with. So
that's good. I didn't think you were going to say that.
No, I'm completely kind of on your side on this, but it's just like I respect
you're
you for saying
guy.
It. Yeah, I respect you for saying it. I don't follow it enough, and I don't read about foreign policy and all this stuff. I just read the basics, and I don't, you know, I just don't feel the need to talk about it because I feel like I'm uneducated when it comes to it. So I'd rather just give my tweets about reality television, since something that I'm very well versed in. So that's kind of the way
well,
I do it.
And
you
I
probably follow it way more than I do, so you have opinions. That's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and my specialty within religion is evangelicals, which is pretty much why Trump is in office. So I know a lot about their motivations and how they see politics. And so that's always relevant, especially in the last couple of years.
Yeah, for sure. Question number 6. What are your favorite shows on TV right now, scripted and non-scripted?
I am pretty excited about Roseanne being on, which given our politics discussion maybe is surprising, but I love Roseanne. I think she's very funny and the show is really funny. So I'm really glad that's back on. And conversely, I love the Will and Grace reboot. I'm super stoked about that. And then non-scripted, I am always really into like the intervention style shows that are actually like super documentary focused. So those are the ones that I'm into, I guess, right now.
Do you like I'm assuming you like the Leah Remini show, right?
Yeah, I like that. And the audio on it sounds great. Wouldn't you agree?
I've only seen like one episode. I've never.
Just go with it because my husband did it. No, I really, really do love that show. And pretty much anything like that style where people aren't fighting or hitting each other.
Yeah. Question number 7. Okay, your husband is British and you, aren't. Does your son have an accent?
He doesn't. It's such a bummer. But
really?
He has a lot of the phrases. He says things like, let's go straight away. And
what the hell does that mean?
That, like right away.
Oh. I didn't even know.
So he picks up a lot of the turns of phrase, but he talks like us, unfortunately. Okay. He does say garage.
Instead of garage?
Yeah.
A garage.
Because that's something he and my husband do together. They'll go into the garage and then work and putter around. So he hears that word more than he hears garage.
Interesting. Okay. No, I was like, oh, I wonder if her son's...
Wouldn't that be cute, accident. Though? Oh,
it's
I wish.
Possible it's possible he could still develop one, right? As he or if he hasn't developed it by now, he's not going to pick it up.
No, because everybody else in his life is American.
That's,
so
yeah, that's true.
Unfortunately, he's got the crappy accent.
Yeah. Okay, so question number 8. Without naming names or even shows for that matter, what's one of the worst behind-the-scenes stories you've ever heard about reality TV production? I mean, I'm sure you've heard tons, but...
Right. Let's see. One of the most recent ones I heard was a person who did work on The Bachelor and was on production, and she was asked to dress up like a waiter and go around to all the cast members and make sure that they had constant alcohol. Because you know how they usually say, like, we don't force anyone to drink, and it's not like that. But she was actually put into a costume, dressed up like a waiter, and made sure that there was never-ending alcohol. That bothered me because I had never heard of anything like that.
And that, I mean, you outed the show. Is that was Bachelor or Bachelorette?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was, but I mean, there are so many. They do stuff constantly. Everything they do on all the shows is so duplicitous. And yeah, and the entire situation is contrived. So you could sit here all day, but it always involves the things they will or won't give you. As simple as have a clock on the wall. There, if you don't know the time ever, it's very disorienting.
Yeah.
And so weird stuff like that doesn't sound like much. When you put it all together, it's like you get out and you're like, what just happened to me?
It's almost like, I think I heard the phrase one time of being on a reality show is like there's a tornado and you're thrown into it. And then the second you're eliminated, you're just thrown out. I mean, you're thrown out of it. And there, that's where you are. Wherever you land, that's where you are. For the whole time that you're in it, it feels like you're in just...
It's your whole world.
Yeah, it's just, you're just, your head's spinning the whole time. And then the second you're eliminated, it's like, all right, see ya. Boom. You're thrown out of the tornado. And you're just like, whoa, what just happened? And that's what it turns
out. For sure. And like weird things where like they'll say something is for safety purposes, a particular way that they are doing something. And then as soon as the show's over, they don't do it that way. And you, because it's a budget thing, and you're like, wait a minute, I thought that such and such had to happen because of safety. And just a lot of it is, they bullshit the cast a lot.
Oh, of course.
And, as soon as it's over, they're like, oops, never mind. And then all bets are off.
There are so many things that you've heard for sure over the years and stuff that I've heard that it's just, it's sad, to hear some of these stories. And it just doesn't seem like anything's changing, but you know, we can only hope, I guess.
I kind of feel like the audience doesn't like the things that I have to say tend to be annoying to a lot of the viewers because it's almost like they want to be willfully ignorant to it because it's supposed to be their escape and their fun time and like their guilty pleasure. And by me being like, wait, these are real people. And when they're done, they can't get a job. That's like a buzzkill.
Well, yeah, it kind of goes back to what you said at the beginning. It's like, they don't want to hear how the sausage is made.
Yeah.
Because if they realized how the sausage is made, they'd be like, whoa, I'm not going to eat it. And in this case, maybe not watch it, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I still think, honestly, though, most people are very well aware that reality TV isn't real, but they don't. They certainly don't understand or grasp the concept of how unreal, quote unquote, it is, which is why the television show Unreal has kind of got a little steam because it kind of showing the behind the scenes of how The Bachelor works. But I think even if they did know, I don't know how many would really, truly stop watching. I think they would still, because they look at it as a guilty pleasure, and they just don't, they don't want to know. They're just like, and even if I do know, great. I mean, yeah, it sucks, or, oh, it sucks what happened to them, but, oh, Becca season's coming up. I want to watch what happens. I want to see if they engage. Like, they can put it behind them, you know?
Yeah. And I, that's why I just feel like it's almost my job to push for production to change, because it's not the audience's job.
Yeah. No, it's not. And yeah, like you said, I think they're going to watch regardless, as long as we're not seeing, like, a death on TV in relation to the show. But yeah, there, it's, yeah, I don't,
there was one, when my husband was working in Asia, and on a production that he worked on, it was a competition show, and one of the producers had wanted to fix the who won, and they put rocks in the person's backpack, and they were, it was a swimming competition, and so the guy drowned
and died.
Yeah. And like, it was in Asia, so I don't think there were any, there wasn't an investigation or anything. It was just sort of like, it was called an accident. But I mean, that's an example of something really terrible that happened.
But your husband worked on the show, and he was aware that rocks were put in this person's backpack and the guy ended up dying?
No, only afterwards. Oh. He was told about rocks.
Oh,
yeah.
Geesh.
Yeah.
Hey, hey, hey.
Gets heavy. It gets heavy.
So question number 9, something we had just talked about. You're very, obviously very opinionated on social media, and you have a lot of trolls who respond to things that you post. What is your main way of dealing with negative reaction to something that you post?
Oh, I just mute them.
Okay.
I mean, it's that simple. I don't block people. And I don't really respond to the trolls most of the time, but I'll just mute them. And then they don't even know if I've ever seen it. And it really has created a nice little safe space for me, because I don't get to see too much of it anymore.
Well, that's the best part. I think mute was a great invention, because if you block them,
totally,
that means that you're giving that person the satisfaction of knowing that they don't want to hear from you anymore. If you just mute them, they can tweet away at you 1,000 times and they'll never know that you never saw it. That's what's great.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It works great. And I mean, and eventually they'll get bored and move on to the next target.
Yeah. And I think that's what's, I love the mute button. It's wonderful. I can't tell you how many people I've muted, and I'm sure they're tweeting at me all day, every day.
Right now.
I'm not seeing a thing. And good, because it's like I said earlier, people that I don't know, I don't care what they think of me. It doesn't matter. It has no bearing on my life whatsoever. So
do your trolls tend to focus on your coverage of the shows, like your work, or do they get personal?
It's very rarely gotten personal. It has happened in the past where it did get personal. I remember there was a time about 5 or 6 years ago where my phone number was being put out in tweets, and I was getting text messages from people saying, hey, your number is out there on Twitter. And I knew exactly who was doing it. And it was bad for a while, and it certainly made me lose trust in people. And and it was a continual harassment over a course of 2 or 3 years, but it was mostly done cyberly, so there wasn't a whole hell of a lot I could do about it. You know, it was just something that I just had to hope that this person just got bored with it. And eventually they did, but could it start up again at any time? Sure. Yeah, I guess it's possible.
Wow. But mostly, like, they'll just be mad that you didn't spoil something, right, or what?
Yeah, obviously when I get stuff wrong, people will remind me of that. I think because I know a lot of behind-the-scenes things about contestants, some people think that that is off-limits, that I should not report things that aren't seen on TV and things that I can't prove. I guess that would be the biggest thing, is that if I didn't see it, it must not be true, which might be one of the more ignorant statements I've ever heard in my life. It's like, everything that I've ever spoiled on The Bachelor, I never saw with my own two eyes. And that became true because you saw it play out on TV. But I guess it's, they're talking about things that don't play out on TV, but I report on, they think that is should be off limits. And I don't really understand that.
No, it's my job to report
what I hear. And I think after 9 years of spoiling, I have a pretty credible background in terms of what I'm reporting that it's probably true. But the people that I guess it affects, or their friends that it affects, or their friends are just sticking up for their friends, think that's wrong. And I should not report gossip. And it's my answer to them is it's not gossip if it's true.
You know? Right.
Sorry. And because it's somebody that you like doesn't make it any less true. And I think that's the kind of the problem. If we want to broaden it, it's kind of the problem with what we're dealing with in the social media world and politics right now. It's like, look, you make a lot of good points when it comes to your anti-Trump stuff. Okay. But someone who loves Trump, it doesn't matter if you present facts, if you presented audio evidence, video evidence, it doesn't matter to them. No matter what you say, you are wrong, because in their minds, they've been programmed to just say fake news to everything that's negative about Trump. And that's just, that's such an ignorant mindset that's why I don't deal with people like that. It's just embarrassing. But anyway, that's that. But I'm saying the same thing with me is if I post something negative about a contestant that they like, oh, well, it must not be true. I was like, why isn't it true? Oh, well, because they seem so nice on TV, or I know them. Okay, great. You know them, but just because you know them doesn't mean that this didn't happen, you know? Like,
right.
Anyway, but yeah, that's a whole other thing. Okay, so question number 10 is what I have something called Explain Your Tweet, where I go through your Twitter account.
Oh, my God.
And I have you explain something. However, I'm not going to go into one of your political tweets, because your your political tweets are pretty self-explanatory. It's like you're just laying out there like, hey, this was a flat-out lie and whatever. But however, you did post something last week that's somewhat relevant to me, or last month, that's somewhat relevant to me right now. On March 2nd, you tweeted, imagine being hungry enough to eat at the TGI Fridays in Times Square. Now, I will say this. 2 weeks ago, I was in New York, and I stayed in Times Square. I did not eat at TGI Fridays, but I did eat at the Olive Garden in Times Square, and it was delicious.
What is wrong with you?
I can't help it. Like, I am literally a shill for the Olive Garden. I wish they would sponsor me on my podcast, because I would rave about them every single week.
What did you order?
The same thing I always order, the tour of Italy. Why wouldn't I?
You're so weird. That is insane.
The tour of Italy, breadsticks with pasta fagioli soup and pasta fagioli, however they want to pronounce it. I either get that. I literally have two dishes at Olive Garden. Yeah, I either get the chicken parm or I get the tour of Italy. That's it.
And you love it with all your
heart. Oh, my God. I cannot explain to you my love. Now, I go through phases where I eat better, where I do eat healthier at times. So right now I'm in one of those phases. So I have not been to Olive Gardens. After that trip, I was like, all right, I had Olive Garden. That was my one for the month or whatever, every 2 months or whatever. But it's almost like a vice for me. It's like, it's hard for me to stay away.
As far as Olive Gardens go, was it superior to your average, or was it just the same?
Oh, it tasted the same as all the other Olive Gardens. However,
with three times the price.
Well, yeah, it was more expensive. And the fact that I was staying at the Marriott Marquis in Times Square, which was literally steps from the Olive Garden. Like, I just got out of my hotel and walked there.
You went there and your family.
I walked from my hotel into the Olive Garden in Times Square, and I could not have been any happier. Like,
you
it
felt
was
like you were home.
Oh gosh, it was so great. So when I saw that tweet from you, I'm like, that is funny. Like, TGI Fridays, I'll eat there on occasion. Well, you know when I eat at TGI Fridays? At the airport, because there's always one at an airport.
Me too. Yeah.
But yeah, that was funny that you tweeted that, because I was like, okay, I can experience that.
The backstory actually to that was that I had seen on Insta Story two cast members from Vendettas eating at a restaurant in Times Square that I could have sworn was a TGI Fridays. And I was like, really? Like, you're in New York City. You could go to some of the best restaurants, or even like a hole in the wall that is different and delicious. And you chose this crappy TGI Fridays. I can't relate.
Do we want to out these two contestants who you were there?
It was Brittany and Devin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, it must have been when, because Brittany and Devin did the after show, right?
Yeah, I think they were filming the reunion, of course. Yeah. You know, MTV's in Times Square. I get it, but I don't get it.
Yeah, there's plenty of other places you could have gone. And trust me, I could have gone to any other place, too, in New York when I was there. However,
you have no regrets, though.
No, I have no regrets because I'm just Olive Garden. I'm an Olive Garden junkie. And
life. And
if I stay in Times, when I go to New York, if I stay in Times Square, I usually end up staying at the Marriott Marquis. And it is walking distance from the Olive Garden. If I was somewhere else, if I was on, I think one of the other places I've stayed is at the W on 49th and Lexington. Would I take a cab to Olive Garden in Times Square? No, I wouldn't. I think the
convenience.
That's
where you draw the line.
Yeah, I'm not getting a cab for you, OG.
That's crazy.
I'm not going to cab for you or Uber for you, OG, but if I can walk to you, you're mine. That's essentially the way I looked at it. Yeah.
I admire your commitment.
Yeah, I'm sure it's embarrassing, but hey, there's a part of me that would probably want some promotional work out of this for the Olive Garden.
This has to happen. We can make this happen. Let's start a campaign.
To get Olive Garden on the Reality Seat podcast?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this week it was Fordo Coffee and Sunbasket. So how about that?
All right. Those are good too.
Yeah. So Fordo is really starting to take off. I got boxes of that and family and friends love that stuff.
Okay. Yeah. That's all right.
Is Olive Garden doing podcast advertising? They need to hop on it.
I don't think a lot of their customers are listening to podcasts.
Darn it.
That's right. My theory.
Yeah. Well, I could get them X amount of listeners a week if they want to, you know, float some money my way and want me to promote it. But anyway, well, that completes the final 10. And that completes this interview. It was great catching up with you again, Susie.
Likewise. I feel so honored. Thank you.
I love that you remembered the trunk question that you asked it to me. You didn't remember my answer, but I remember. I love that you remembered
though.
It. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, God, that was, when you said that, that was 5 years ago. Because that was I remember doing that interview with you and just being in a different place than I'm in right now. And I was in my old place. And that's how I knew, like, wow, this must have been at least 2013 because I was in my old place when I did that interview with you. And
I sent you a thank you card and you said I was classy.
Yes, you did.
Which I was really appreciative of.
Yes. Well, you're welcome because you are. I mean, I'm sure there are people on Twitter who disagree with whether you're classy.
Thank you card,
yeah, so. Exactly. but yeah, I remember, I think you were the first podcast I was ever a guest on, I think.
Wow, that's amazing.
Because in 2013, podcasting wasn't what it was now. I mean, this is really the new medium. So, so continued success with your podcast. Thank you for coming on, and we will definitely do it again in the future.
Yes, keep in touch. Thank you so much.
Will do. Thanks, Susie.
Bye, Steve. Thanks.
Bye. Thank you to Susie for that. She was great. A lot of good talk about production and the behind-the-scenes work of reality television. And yeah, there is something seriously wrong in the industry. But as we said numerous times during that podcast, it's hard to think that things are going to change. And until a producer or numerous producers in the reality TV world literally file suit against the shows they're working on, and kind of come out with their own quote-unquote Me Too movement and talk about the conditions that they have to work under, it doesn't look like anything's going to change. And you ask numerous contestants off record what it was like and how those producers really are, and they'll tell you, I don't know how those people sleep at night, and I don't know how they work the way they do and treat people the way they do. So unfortunately, that's the way it is. It's the giant secret. But until a group of them come out and say, we are not going to put up with this anymore, and I don't think a lot of them will, because the second they do speak out, they're out of a job in that industry. And it pays well, so I think they look at it that way, like almost kind of the things that Susie said. It's a means to an end for them. And it's like, well, they should know what they're getting into. And I just don't think that's good enough. But that's just one man's opinion. Thank you very much to her, though. That'll do it for podcast number 72. We'll be back next week with podcast number 73. I'm your host, Reality Steve. And until then, we'll talk to you next week. See you.